Welcome to Indie Game Business, where you'll learn to navigate the industry with ease. This show is produced by the Powell Group, the leading business consulting firm in the gaming industry. Visit us online at indiegame.business to learn about our online digital events. We have some amazing sessions with people in the gaming industry, and you can participate for free and purchase inexpensive passes to our industry-leading business-to-business system. Now, here we go, Indie Game Business. Everybody, and happy November. Can't even believe that it's November. My name is Indy, and that gentleman right next to me over here, that's Jay Powell from Powell Group Consulting, and welcome to an amazing episode of Indie Game Business. We've got Michael Lieb from Kickstarter, so you're going to get all the information you need to know about Kickstarter. I could sum it up in one sentence. So, Kickstarter with a community already built. You can't build a community on Kickstarter.
All right, good.
Bring them. That's it.
We're done.
Welcome, Michael. We're happy to have you.
Thanks for the invite.
Michael Love. Sorry. Michael
Love.
Michael Love, right.
Michael Love.
So I'm a little, like, already jealous because Michael's already started drinking because he's in Germany and I have water. And so it's, like, not near. I could get up and go get one from the fridge over there, but that would require me getting up. Thank you so much for coming on. So we met at Gamescom, I believe, right?
True, yeah. We were. Is this, like, now the correct audio setting? Sorry, I have to ask because so many buttons I have to press. You can hear me, right?
We're good.
Right. Okay. Sorry. This is the sentence of the year, right? Still ongoing. Can you hear me?
You need to unmute yourself.
On Discord. Oh, yeah. Aha. Yes. Okay. See? You cannot hear me.
So no, we have not been drinking already. That's so, perfectly fine.
I just come from a networking event. There's a new studio that just opened up in Berlin, Babelsberg, or a city next to Berlin. And they invited me to join. And so, yes, I'm here already.
And I'm jealous. All right. So let's start with my favorite question. Tell us how you originally got into the industry and then walk us through your career up to today.
Okay. How did I originally come into the industry? It all started with my Erasmus sponsorship I got. Erasmus is a thing we have in Europe, so you can go to a university in a different country in Europe. They give you like a couple of euros to pay the rent, etc. And I was like, okay, that was a year before I had to finish my bachelor's degree. And I was going through my bookshelf. I was going by bike, actually, from Germany to Spain, and I was like, okay, I have one book I can take that's relevant for university. Which one is it? And I took a book that was on computer games in education, and I said, okay, that's my thing to do. So that's the book I took, and that's how it all started: thinking, reflecting, working around games. And at university, I discovered very early on that I'm kind of the only one that didn't make sense 15 years ago. Why? Video games is nothing new, but why is the whole academic world not talking about it? So I grasped the opportunity and said, okay, I'm your games guy. So dear professors, if you want to know what a video game or a computer game is, talk to me. So early on, I was invited to conferences. I actually have some publishing going on. So if you go onto academia.org, you can find my name, Michael Liebe. I published a couple of books. It's articles, I mean, that are published in books. And it's all about games as a medium. And then during that phase, we started organizing conferences for the academic world. And this is fun. Okay. We have a saying also in Germany that is, wer nichts wird, wird, wird. Means, if you don't know what to do, just open a bar. And
God, I love Germany.
So if you are translate that to conferences and events, it's like start events, right? So I took that expertise that I gained at university and started Amaze together with a friend while I was working part-time for Game Phase, a magazine back in the days that existed only in Germany. And we flew to Shanghai, and Thorsten was the video, the face in front of the camera. I was the guy behind the camera, and we were sitting at this party of some major publisher with the green colors scheme, and was thinking, now this is not the games industry we appreciate and love. We need to start something new. So that was then. After like very late at night, I think 2 a.m. in the morning in Shanghai, we were sitting somewhere and said, hey, let's start a festival together celebrating video games and art. And that's how Amaze was born. And then art is not the best thing to earn money. So I started a job in video games funding. So I worked at Medienbord Berlin Brandenburg, and we supported developers get funding for their games. That's how all my expertise started on fundraising. And then I quit again and started my own company. And in that phase, I met Luke from Kickstarter, Luke Crane, who was back in the days leading the department. And pitched to him sponsoring my event, and instead of sponsoring my event, he hired me. That's how I landed working for Kickstarter. That was 2016. And ever since, I evolved with the platform and did a lot of different things. That said, I still do own my company. So the heart you see up here, that's the logo of my company. It obviously is love, a heart. So Booster Space has a heart as a logo. And through that, we do some consultancy stuff. And we did Games Week Berlin up until end of last year. That was still a thing. And now I also work at an NGO called Tales of Us, where I'm director of development, so helping the team actually producing a game for kids with content we co-create across the globe. But that's a different story. So that's how I landed at Kickstarter.
That is awesome. So there's so many questions, and we're going to get, I'm sure, a lot from the audience as well, because Kickstarter is always a popular topic here. So if you're out there listening and you have a question you want Michael's answer on, just pop it in the chat. We'll get it taken care of. But let's start with, when you're doing a Kickstarter for a game, is it wise to focus on that, or what sort of other funds should you be bundling with it? How does it fit into just the general landscape of getting your game funded?
Yeah, that's a very good and basic question that fits into the whole storyline of you're building a company if you're doing a game, and you're not doing a Kickstarter because of the Kickstarter. You're doing it because you want to build a company that is working on multiple games. So the Kickstarter should always be considered as not the means to end, but a tool that helps you fulfill your dreams, that helps fulfill your goals. So you got to know your goals, but it can never, and I would even say for the big campaigns, it was never the only source of funding. It can never be the sole source of funding. You always, and that's me also being founder myself and a business owner myself, is the fun part of it. You have to be creative in fundraising. You can mix public funding with crowdfunding or Kickstarter. You can do your work for hire stuff to create a brand and build expertise and take that money to produce your own game. And Kickstarter can then help you elevate. It can also help you find publishers or other investor types that say, hey, this game is great. Let me jump onto the hype train as many other backers already did. So it's always part of the funding mix. It's never the sole funding source.
So speaking of publishers, and it's always I'm not going to say touchy, but it's always interesting conversation around publishers and their thoughts on Kickstarters and their reaction to Kickstarters. So, I mean, first and foremost, is Kickstarter something that publishers in general like? Do they dislike it? And I know there's like a shitload of publishers, but in general, yeah. I mean, what is the general publisher sentiment for Kickstarter?
Yeah. Something we are... or I'm at least observing is there's a change. So when I started 2016, so that's what, 7 years ago, 8 years almost, the approach was different. Publishers were saying, hey, we are the marketing magicians. We want to announce the new IP. We want to announce the new game. We want to announce the new team. If you were already on Kickstarter, you're not attractive for us because... obviously, it's out in the world already. That has changed a lot. Obviously, not for every publisher. Many, especially the bigger AAA publishers, they have their own scheme. But as we see the number and style of publishers growing, same time as the number of developers and games coming out is growing, there's no rule of thumb anymore, I would say. As for Kickstarter and publishing, actually, just last week, I was talking to one of the bigger indie publishers and asked him the same question, like, what's your take, actually? Is my gut feeling correct that you do accept games that already were on Kickstarter? And he said, yes, for sure. We don't care, actually, what you did before. We care about what we can build with you. From now on for the future. And this is something I see happening a lot. I even have publishers who do the Kickstarters themselves for the indie games. I even have publishers who kind of have a pre-agreement with the developers, chipping in double the amount you raised on Kickstarter, or supporting in the back and then jumping on it once it's funded publicly. So there's a lot of different opportunities, but definitely it is not a no-go anymore. On the contrary, I would say Kickstarter is always a proof of concept, and it is a proof of demand also for a publisher.
So one, that is fascinating that there's a publisher out there that says we're going to fund twice what Kickstarter. I mean, that has to have limits, or that could really screw somebody. Like, hey, we went viral and raised $3 million. That is interesting.
That guy, that game funded like triple the time they had estimated. So yes, it was a good story in that line. So that didn't go 3 million, but it was pretty big.
I just see some publishing executive chain smoking at his desk, watching the Kickstarter numbers go up. So one of the things that I've seen publishers react to in, you know, the different green light meetings that we do with publishers here on our scouting stuff is sometimes they'll look at a Kickstarter and they're like, well, they didn't make their funding. Therefore the game must be shit. And that's not always the case. You know, at the end of the day, these developers aren't publishers. They aren't marketing people. So you can't really expect them to. It's like, so when a developer encounters that reaction, you know, what are some of the things that they can point to and say, I mean, aside from going, we don't know marketing, that's why we need a publisher, which is always kind of what I remind them of. What are some of the things that they could point to and say, but look, this is why this happened. Here are some indicators that we were, you know, tracking for something different, that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Um, I really do like your tagline. It depends.
I do. I trademarked the name and the logo. I want to be able to trademark that too, but you know, I don't think the patent office or whoever I have to do that to is going to fall for it.
Exactly. And here it depends as well. Surprise. So what's happening actually more than that, after that you still have to go, in German we say Klinkenputzen. Remember that it's one word, Klinkenputzen. It means you go to door to door and, you know, pull down the handle and clean the door opener.
Oh my God. German is so fascinating. I thought you were going to say it means go to door to door like you were doing sales, but no, it got even more specific than that. Okay, so go ahead. So
exactly. So you don't necessarily go Klinkenputzen after the failed Kickstarter. Actually, sometimes it does happen, and I have a pretty good case also coming out of Germany where publishers said, hey, these guys, they have a really great game, but they didn't manage to build a community, they didn't manage to do the marketing game right, so let us work with them. So they actually do reach out. On the other hand, I would always recommend, be honest to yourself. So most probably it was not only the marketing that led to you not reaching the funding goal. It was your messaging perhaps, yes, as well, but it might actually also be your game. So you might not have a game that people want. And the Kickstarter community tells you kind of by not funding it and not creating a hype train together with you. So take that more as a learning also potentially, and say, yes, we need to like go back into our brainstorming sessions and rethink actually what we are building. And that's the beauty of it also. It potentially saves you a lot of money, a lot of time, but also a lot of emotional, how do you say, like downfalls. Because if you open these doors and everybody says no also in the future, but you already kind of knew it because even the Kickstarter community said no, but you didn't listen and didn't reflect on that enough, potentially it's better to just build a new game, a different game, rather than trying to sell what you think is the best game ever.
So, all right, let's get into, we've already got questions coming in, and God knows I want to make sure that folks actually get their questions answered. All right, so first one from Amber on YouTube. What digital rewards or tiers are popular for video campaigns, specifically in terms of RPGs?
Uh-huh. So yes, please stay digital. If you do a video game, you should not send t-shirts, posters, and whatever. You didn't ask that, but just taking this as a lead to that answer ahead of time. RPGs are great because they have like villains or NPCs or areas to unlock and discover. So you can go wild in creativity, actually. You can say, hey, name the end boss, name this little tree, name, I don't know, your RPG, which setting it is in, but let's just take fantasy because it's mostly the type. Name this bench, name this, you're actually the shop reselling swords to the heroes, name this bar even, or be the bartender. Send us your picture and you're the bartender in this village, like that's 20 hours in. These are amazing things for people to really like manifest themselves in their favorite medium called video games. That said, always be aware that the production of these are not dependent on your skills, but they are dependent on the communication with the backer. So if somebody chips in 1,000 to be the end boss and he doesn't reply, but you kind of did promise, you have a deal, and you just cannot continue developing the game because this backer disappears. So that also happens. So you should try to make the risk assessment in terms of that your final game doesn't really depend on it. And worst case, at the very end, you can just cancel it. So it's not the NPC deciding the main quest, right? You're waiting for that for ages until the backer comes back to you. So it's something less in the line of missions and quests that have to be done. So it's more cosmetics. So focus on individualizing cosmetics with the creativity of your backer community. That said, anybody should also focus really on the tip a standard. Like, have a standard. This is the standard game. And then don't go crazy on creative stuff. Try to keep it as simple as you can and also afford. Keep it hand manageable is the English term. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I mean, one of the ones that I always look to as like the no-brainer, and I think it was really well done, and it really, I mean, easy to implement, is, mm-hmm. you know, back on the original Pillars of Eternity, mm-hmm. one of the tiers lets you name someone that's in a bar. So you go into a tavern and some of the people, and even had a little backstory if you like right clicked on that person. I mean, yeah. Those are fairly simple things to implement, but it's really, really cool for, you know, people to come in there. You got to do a little bit of moderation because you don't want some X-rated backstory, but a lot of things like that are, if you're doing an RPG, you have so many NPCs.
Yes.
I mean, there's, if anything, you're getting paid to save yourself some trouble. It's like, let the community do it. So, I mean, I think it really is one of the mediums that has a lot of options out there. You just need to be, you know, creative.
Yeah. And even companions, right? The dog, the cat, mm-hmm. the pig. Some people in Berlin own pigs and walk them on the streets. So yeah, do that.
I have had two of my dogs in video games, you know.
Uh-huh.
We'll say, hey, we want to put you in the game. I'm like, don't put me in the game. I, you know, no, but here's my dog. My dog.
Right. Yes.
So yeah, one of them, you know, has passed on, and he has a living memoriam.
Awesome.
You know, not really, but yeah. He is in a game. I don't know if other games for sale anymore, but he was. All right. Anyway. So next, we have a whole slew of questions here. I may not have to actually do any thought for the rest of the podcast. All right. Okay. When would be the appropriate time to publish a game's life cycle on Kickstarter? What has been the range of funding goals? So when in the life cycle is it the best time to start, you know, promoting it and moving it to a Kickstarter?
Yeah. So venture out, you're cheating, but okay, we are live, so let's play your games to your rules. So you have two questions. Life cycle. You might be aware that tabletop games are a lot more successful and popular on Kickstarter than video games at the moment. This is due to the fact that their lives, that they can develop, or they do design everything ahead of time. They have all the deals with the manufacturers and the shipment companies done. So all they have to do after they get the funding is press a couple of buttons and then execute and ship. Video games obviously is different, right? So you have to code and actually work on the content even after the Kickstarter. But the community is used to this tabletop game phenomena more and more. And they then expect video game people to kind of adapt. So what I want to say with that is, A, you have to have a demo, a vertical slice that works. You don't have to publish it, but it needs to be ready and playable and bug-free. Also because you need to have the assets you use to promote the Kickstarter coming out of your in-game content. Then the shorter the time span between Kickstarter and shipment, the better. People will trust you more that you will actually deliver the deeper you're in. It's the same as with publishers at the moment. It's like the industry works more and more. And that's a bit tricky, because typically if you're more a game designer, you focus on the mechanics first and then add the eye candy after. For a successful Kickstarter, it's all about the visuals. So it needs to look awesome. Even your prototype, even your demo needs your vertical slice. It needs to just be the visual standard you want to publish also later. So that's the development status you got to have. And funding goals are based on also what we see on the big distribution platforms such as Steam, where people are not willing to pay too much anymore. So also funding goals on Kickstarter are shrinking, going down. With also the side effect, and perhaps, Jay, this leads into a second topic already, the hype train that jumps in once you have your game funded. So psychology-wise, people prefer not the Kickstarter drama. Let's fight together to actually reach this funding goal. It's more the hype train, the lemmings effect. Let's go to where everybody else is going. So once something is funded already, people tend to be more likely to also support your campaign. So create a lower funding goal, reach your goal earlier, and then you will reach more funds in the end game.
But so that strategy can also backfire on you. How much lower is the question? Because I've seen these teams and they put out a Kickstarter goal of $20,000, and we're sitting here looking at it going, that's a $500,000 game. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be able to make it for $20,000. And sure enough, mm-hmm. they make their goal, but they don't make their budget. So how much lower should you be aiming so you don't put yourself in that position?
Well, that's kind of coming back to the first question, right? Where we said Kickstarter is not the sole mm-hmm. means for funding. You always need to have a story, and it always needs to make sense and also fit to it, the reality. I just 2 weeks ago worked with the campaign that actually asked for 25,000. They landed at 50K, and the production budget was 2 million.
And oh my God.
Yeah. but it worked because they have the money. They did it for the final sprint. They did it for some final polishing, and first and foremost did it to get actually community input on like what they might want to focus on next. Like this, what we had on the previous question, the creative input is also part of the crowdfunding, is also crowdsourcing. So you get feedback or ideas even coming in. And this type of content, they have the money for, but they didn't know what to work on. And so the Kickstarter community kind of guides them also on what's more interesting. Doesn't really answer your question, I know. But what I want to say, it depends.
Yeah, really.
And it depends on, you need to be able to have other funds. You just can't rely on Kickstarter as your sole funding source.
But that is interesting, because in the last several years, we have seen a lot of studios use a Kickstarter towards the end of development as a marketing mm-hmm. tool.
Right.
More so than just a pure funding tool. Mm-hmm. But again, even then, they have a community set up, and you know they're not expecting the Kickstarter to bring everybody in. So, that would still terrify me if you didn't have all that money and you needed 2 million and you only asked for 25,000. That would be, oh my God.
That would not work also towards the community, because they're not stupid anymore. They were stupid, potentially, let's call it naive in the beginning. they didn't know how it works. But now backers also know how game production works, right? And they are a lot savvier than they were in the past. So if you would just lie to them, I need 2 million, but let's start with 25K. Nobody will even help you get your 25K because they know you will never reach 2 million. So people actually go in and see. So we have this risk and challenges thing in Kickstarter. And that's where you drop. I have my own money because I do work for hire for 20 years and I have budget to actually develop this game. I just want to work with you. I have public funding, 1 million. I have a publisher deal, 500K, whatever it is, right? This is the information you, if you have a high production volume, you should definitely put in and be transparent about, else you won't even reach that very small goal.
Yeah, that can. I'm sorry, too many questions going through my head right now. But yeah, it is. it is terrifying, and yes, you're right. It does depend. So, from Barslav on LinkedIn, can you touch upon how long are the pre-campaigns nowadays? And you might want to start with what actually constitutes a pre-campaign and why you should do it. But
yeah,
that plus like how long are they running?
Yes, thanks, Borislav, for that question. The pre-campaign is something we introduced a couple of years ago. So it's nothing Kickstarter had forever. I think it was 2020 when we introduced that. So it's that micro page you have where you can send your social media campaigns to. So this is a great means for your CTA on this, the call to action and the social media communication and newsletters and whatever. Subscribe, follow here to be the first to know. And the beauty about it is you have to have a Kickstarter account to follow. And then we, as a platform, send to all of these people who are following your campaign a notification on in the app and in email. Saying, hey, it just launched, you were following this, back now, don't miss the opportunity. And that's very powerful. The time question that was asked is, we do recommend the longer the better, actually. Doesn't mean do it 10 years, 2 years, whatever, but like 6 months is a good rule of thumb to get started. And you should start as soon as you can. And the trick is, I don't know if you just add me on LinkedIn, send me a message and say, hey, I'm working on this Kickstarter campaign, blah. Because you can actually get this pre-marketing with pretty basic information. All we need as a platform is that we see what the game is about and you have a good title and good means it works. We don't evaluate quality, a title and a visual, and it all like adds up as information. We know what the game will be about, and then start that. And then it just helps you do your pre-market, your communication, I mean, before you launch the campaign, because you always have the CTA, follow us here, be the first to know. That said, just next week, a campaign will launch, a big video game. They actually don't give a shit about the pre-marketing. They will do the old school way. So let's see what happens. They will just launch. But they want to raise 500K. So exciting. Everything's possible.
So they're just going to pull the pin on that grenade and roll it across the table and see what happens.
Exactly, yeah. And then say, Michael, I told you so. And I will then need to like adjust my consultancy all over.
Just tell them it depends. It just depends. So if the Kickstarter was successful, how do stretch goals work? Because we do hear a lot of, you know, feedback and should you do them, should you not do them?
Sign up today for the Indie Game Business Newsletter. It's a weekly source of business news curated for indie dev teams. We've got discounts on all Indie Game Business events and events from all of our partners. You get a first look at the summaries and takeaways from all of our podcasts. There are exclusive opportunities for promotions and early access to new tools for development, monetization, and more. Check it out. Sign up. PowellGroupConsulting.com/publisher-list.
So how do stretch goals work? What happens if one of the stretch goals does reach the goal? Does the developer keep the money that was raised for that specific goal? I'm guessing that should have been doesn't reach the goal.
So yeah, just basic. So if it does not reach the goal, nothing happens. No credit card is kind of pulled money from Kickstarter. Oops, Kickstarter doesn't get anything. The creator doesn't get anything. The backers don't pay anything.
I think they're talking about the goal for a stretch goal. So if like I say at 50,000, I'm going to, you know, name an NPC after you, and at 100,000, yeah, I'm going to name my kid after you, but I got 75,000.
Yeah.
So yeah, they exactly. Still keep that 25K. They just aren't obligated to do that 100,000 goal, stretch goal.
Yes. I mean, we're talking crowdfunding, right? So crowdfunding is not a pre-sale. So you're not obligated and nobody can sue you if you don't deliver what you promised. But as you're talking to with community and people, you might burn your name. So you should always strive to over-deliver. You never always meet people twice in life. The money question, yes, factually, whatever you raise, you get, minus the Kickstarter fees, minus the payment provider fees, minus the fraud, student credit cards, so take down 10%. But everything that like was the funding result at the end of the campaign is what will be paid out, no matter what you put on the stretch goals. That said, you should not announce your stretch goals before you launch the campaign or at the beginning of the campaign before you reach your funding goal, because people will think the dog is an essential part of the game, and if we do not reach the game, we will get a less quality than the initial funding goal promises. It goes a bit to the RPG question. It's more about cosmetics, and you need to be really careful that it does not fuck up your production budget. So if you like say, hey, for 20K, we do in multiplayer, but we only plan the single player for 10K, explode, right? You will not be able to deliver that for 10K more. So always try to be very cautious about what it is. I will add a Pink Panther. Costs me 1,000 in production, but it's in the stretch goal of like, you know, 20,000 above funding goal. Doesn't hurt, is easy to do. Everybody is happy because everybody gets the Pink Panther. So that it's a bit tricky with the stretch goals, but they're fun and they add a lot of community activation opportunities. And you can also pivot while the campaign is running and say, hey, do you want a Pink Panther or do you want a Black Panther? And then the community can also vote about it whenever you reach that next stretch goal.
All right, let's see what's next. They just keep rolling in here. So talking about following, so we've got two questions back to back. What advice can you give on building a following for your first game since you don't have much of a portfolio yet? I'm asking from the perspective of narrative games such as visual novels. So how do you go about building that community in the first place?
I cannot pronounce your name. I'm sorry. 1105 is easy to say. There's no one fits all answer to that question. I would say be brave and you always have something to say. 99% of the population of the world is not working on this awesome content you're working on. It's not working on this awesome visual novel you're working on. It's not doing anything creative. They're just doing their 9-to-5. So you have always an opportunity to communicate because you're doing something other people also admire. it slips my English now, but you're being brave and creative to go out is something that other people also admire. So you have something always to communicate. We're working on this, we're working on that. This is a screenshot Saturday. This is the build we have. So I would want to motivate you to be brave in communications, because you have something to say, which actually people will appreciate. Even if it's just a dog pic or a dog pic, even if it's just you being like walking in the street and taking a, you know, you need to go strolling to get your mind free to work on the next challenge. It's something to communicate. Social media works based on regular communication. The algorithms designed by the platform owners are very much based on regular output and then interaction with the community. So that's super crucial. The biggest retention rate you have through emails at the end. So what you should definitely do, and that's super important, have a landing page on your website, gameawesome.com, MailChimp, whatever tool you're using, email, subscribe. At every event, you have a little tablet, subscribe to newsletter. That's the highest conversion rate, actually, at the end.
All right. So here, building on the community question. So how much of a following should you have before even considering the Kickstarter? Mm-hmm. Or with a more tangible number, how many wish lists on Steam is a good indicator of a game ready for Kickstarter? That's a good question.
It is a good question, but it doesn't help. Conversion from conversion from Steam to Kickstarter is minimal. The Steam community or Steam audience is very different to the Kickstarter community. You do Steam for a bargain. You do Kickstarter because you want to support the creator, create something new. So the motivation to engage with the content is very different. The better number to count is actually your mailing list subscribers. So how many people do you have on your mailing list? And is the interaction you have on your favorite social media tool? So let's take Twitter, X, whatever. You go out there. Do you like just push and nobody reacts? No interest. Do you push and many people react and share? High interest. So that's the better evaluating base number. How many people do you have? There's a formula actually we can put to that. And you should always consider people, not money. So you say you need to calculate based on your average funding per backer, how many people do you need to reach that funding goal? Average funding per backer is the base fund, your Steam price, let's say $15. You add 20%, let's take $20 because you have the exclusives and blah. So you have an average funding of 20. Calculate how many people do you need paying 20 to get your funding goal. That's how you know how many people you will need to get reach your funding goal. Divide that by four. Four because 50% comes from Kickstarter and you only need 50% out of that, so 25% at the beginning of the campaign. So if you feel confident that the number you have, thanks to this calculation, helps you reach your funding goal, then go live. I hope that makes sense.
I mean, is there a average conversion rate? I mean, is there something that says, okay, look, I know when it comes to in-game monetization, you're looking at like 1-3% of your people. Is it the same, or is there a higher conversion rate because you are dealing with somebody who is already a fan of what you're doing?
Yeah. Thanks for that follow-up question. It's crazy, actually, the range we have. we have between below 5% to above 60% of conversion from pre-campaign followers to your live campaign. That's why I do appreciate people doing numbers. You should do that. But you need to have a gut feeling also. You need to listen to how do people react? Are they really engaging? And to cite a good friend, Thomas Bidot, he says, it's not about the likes, it's about the love. And that's something you notice on how people engage. And if people engage a lot, you know your conversion rate will be higher. But there's no formula we can give there. It's between 5 and 60%, so nothing one, right?
I love that. That's a very safe range. It will be either between 5 and 60%. What are you worried about? It'll fit perfectly. So going back to something that you touched on earlier, Red Light Gamer says, at what stage, you know, should making a Kickstarter, what stage of the game does it make sense? For context, I'm currently pitching a pre-seed round where we have a concept and early prototype. So my guess is that's too early, because you said earlier everything needs to look pretty and be fairly playable for people to get interested. So are we looking at beyond vertical slice?
Well, Jay, I have to quote you again. It depends. It depends on what you need to reach, right? You can actually also play with us, with Kickstarter. And if you are transparent about it, you might even just want to test messaging and say, hey, I have this game idea. I need to know, do you like it? Let's reach this $1,000 funding goal together and see what happens. All you will get is, if I'm ever done, you'll get all the love I can give you. But it's not like this typical transaction thing. You can do that. But yes, by the book, that would be too early. So if you really are serious about Kickstarter as part of your distribution strategy, then you should be as late as you can, actually.
All right, so two-part question for you, and I'll hit you with the first part first, not to just overwhelm you. What is the biggest thing that you see developers do on Kickstarter where you just want to grab them and shake them and tell them not to do this? What is that biggest mistake that you see them make?
Just go live without even communicating about it. And it's my favorite statistic is actually, Jay, coming back to numbers, conversion rate in video game, not conversion rate, funding success rate, sorry, is the term I'm looking for. Success rate in video games is below 30% globally. Because there's so many people who don't have any pre-communication running. If you have 25, so your neighbors, friends, family, backing you, average success rate increases to 70%.
With just 25 backers?
Yeah. So a lot of people in video games specifically just go out and say, yeah, whatever, boom, launch, and nothing happens. And that's where I really would like a... Sorry, I don't understand.
All right. And so what is the one key denominator that you see in the successful games that more people need to be doing and emulating?
That's a tricky one. What I do really like, actually, see what some of the tabletop game guys are doing. There's like, for tabletop games, Kickstarter is a no-brainer, kind of. So many people use it, and savviness and how to use the tool and platform is a lot higher actually at the moment than it is in video games. And the social activation methods they have, like, is like social micro campaigns, and not the boring 1,000 retweets, not 1,000 would be too much, 10 retweets and we add something, blah. It's really like engaging in parallel, like on Facebook or Instagram or X, about next steps of the Kickstarter community goals, and taking that input, putting it into updates on the page, and really talking to the people and not just pushing, right? Listening also, asking. But so really using Kickstarter as a community engagement tool. And then suddenly, boof, they have 10,000 backers, because they really are, yeah, again, talking. It's a dialogue. It's not a push marketing tool.
I was like, I had a follow-up question and I forgot it, but I got it now. We're so much turmoil, and I love the phrase, the shitification, and in social media right now. Mm-hmm. X may or may not be imploding. We've got new things like Threads and Blue Sky and Mastodon. Are there particular social media channels that are converting better than others?
Yes. What was your phrase? Shit, whatever.
Shitification. If you're not familiar with it, it's a brilliant term that some guy coined, and it basically means all these social media or brand, or any kind of brand, but it's usually social media. They did these wonderful things to get all these people, and everybody's really happy with it. But once they hit a critical mass of people, then they go public, yeah, and they start stripping things away, and the you know, platform gets shittier as time goes on. And so he said it's the shitification of, but it's, I love it. I absolutely love that. But I mean, yeah, it's like with all of this turmoil going on, are there social media channels that are converting and are better source of your effort than other ones?
So yeah, we do notice that a lot, this shitification phenomena. Trust your IMAP means email. That is what I said that earlier, where conversion rate is higher. Trust your HTTPS, your website. Have that. Don't only go onto social media. I see that actually also happening. So these two old school channels do work very well still, especially when it comes to Kickstarter and conversion. Paid marketing works best with Mark. So Meta is the thing to go for paid marketing. Facebook and Instagram actually still do work. X, I don't know. Actually, people say at the moment, before, like 2 years ago, I said use Twitter first and then Facebook. Now I'm not sure about that. I actually changed that just recently in my last week's presentation. So X is more, and also Mastodon and Blue Sky, whatever it is more B2B in terms of indie to indie. And that's very powerful as well. So you shouldn't underestimate that. The resharing and the also backing within the industry is a big thing, actually. Which platform to take? I would always recommend just take the one you're most familiar with, you appreciate, yeah, like you feel safest with and most at home at. And focus, if you don't have a good social media pipeline, or also you're not the social media type, take one, pick one, and then it doesn't really care. If you're really good at that one and you have your email list, then you're fine. That said, conversion from TikTok, just because everybody's talking about TikTok, to Kickstarter, I don't see relevant numbers.
That's interesting. Yeah. Because that's such a hot one at the moment, is everybody's like, yeah, you don't TikTok, you know, you'll go crazy. Yeah, that is interesting. So, I mean, in your mind, would you, when you're building that community, because you brought up newsletters, and I think newsletters are vastly underappreciated in this industry. Would you be looking at pointing your community to a newsletter or to a Discord?
Discord. Newsletter. So the Discord is good for interaction, right? It's a different beast. The beauty of an email is you send it, people receive it, they open it when they have time to open it. It's not the stress factor, as you know, the red button on your interface. But it can explain actually what's happening. You can put a nice visual, your text, link. So that's the very strong CTA. The Discord community is a lot more work. If you can handle that, it's a very, at the moment, yes, I actually did not say that to the first question. It's a very powerful tool. I see a lot of conversion happening from Kickstarter, from Discord to Kickstarter, actually.
But that's interesting. That's a good point, too. If you've got the time and the community management skills and people to actually manage that community, Discord is going to be more engaging. But if you don't, you do a newsletter.
Yes.
But yeah, that's absolutely dead on. All right, so we've got about another 5 minutes. So if you have other questions on Kickstarter, put it in chat, let us know. Let's revisit the one you and I talked about right before we went live, and where we said, you know, a couple of years ago, the written rule was 85% of your funding is going to come from the community, but you said that's actually lower now.
Well, statistics are 50% plus or minus is what's coming from Kickstarter. The thing is, the bigger your initial community is, the more we can add to it. It's a simple rule. John, head of games at Kickstarter, always says, we cannot ignite your fire. We can only put oil into it. Right. So that's the
rule. Do not try that at home. That's how a lot of these TikToks are made. You know,
right.
Especially where I live, where "Hey, y'all, watch this" is a proof disclaimer. So, and Aurora's got a good question that I want to get into, because we're going to get into the "Hey, plug what you're doing." In your completely unbiased opinion, how does Kickstarter, what are the benefits of Kickstarter versus Indiegogo or some of the other platforms out there for raising money?
Right. So for video games, I would say we are the way to go. If you want to do Kickstarter, crowdfunding, then it's Kickstarter for video games. For other games and for other product types such as suitcases or jackets or whatever, design and technology stuff, it's a different environment. That said, there are some local, like in France, for example, there's Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and Ulule. They really well tailor the French speaking France based communities. So that might make sense for you. In Italy, there's also some, I don't know what, it's a broad field. The big global players, the named Indiegogo for video games. Indiegogo went the way, actually, I shouldn't say that here in this sense. Let's focus on what we do best. We have a lot of repeat backers, actually, and that's really strong. So we have an active community. So it's not just a buzzword. People do come back to Kickstarter once they're hooked in co-creating together with you, enabling your creative vision. They do come back, and that's what Kickstarter is strongest at, not only in quality, but also in quantity. We are by far really by far, far, far the biggest crowdfunding platform.
So brings the next question is, and this is all assuming that you have the capacity to manage this. Mm-hmm. Is there anything wrong with doing, or is there any rule against doing a Kickstarter and at the same time doing one of these more regional sites like the ones you mentioned mm-hmm. in France or Italy? I mean, if you don't have enough capacity to manage a Kickstarter, you're obviously not going to have enough capacity to manage multiple crowdfunding things. But assuming you do, is there any rule against that?
Yes. So Kickstarter is very, let me call it elitist. We say if you have been anywhere else before, we don't accept you. Others are less strict about that. So you should always do the Kickstarter first, and then you can go to your local community. You cannot do it the other way around. You can obviously do the French version, blah, blah, and then you do the English version, amazing. Two different IPs, kind of. That's, we wouldn't notice that. But if it's the same IP, you do it on in yet another crowdfunding platform, Kickstarter would not allow it. And you should not do it also, because you would confuse your community. Where do I go? Doing it back to back, you can work with the community on that. You missed the Kickstarter, let's do this. Fair enough, why not? But in parallel, you would lose people. You don't know where to send them to.
All right, we got one coming in, and you are uniquely positioned to answer this question. Lost it there. Are Kickstarter funds from a campaign run in Germany taxable? And if so, under what tax?
This guy wants to bring me to jail. Because there is a law in Germany and in most other countries as well. If you're not a registered tax consultant, you're not allowed to give tax advice. So I'm sorry that I can only give you hints and not a straightforward answer. Kickstarter is crowdfunding. Crowdfunding is a bit in a gray zone in the taxation system. We are not a shop. So we are not a tool, so we're not a shop platform. So we don't provide you with invoice systems you can treat your backers with, because this is not what we are. We are not pre-selling. We are enabling creative visions become a reality. And this is not pre-sale, so you don't get invoices. In Germany, though, as in most other countries as well, any money landing on your bank account of your company, your private account, whatever, will be checked, and you need to explain why you got this money. So my advice would be always treat it as income.
And if you want, you know, tips on how to completely evade the taxes in your country, that's a paid section that we offer down the road, and we can't cover that.
Exactly.
Kidding. Yeah. We don't offer tax evasion. Is there an efficient third-party tool or a data report site to perform analysis on previous Kickstarter to get an idea of goals from prior campaigns that might relate to your game?
Weston's World Studio, you're smart. That's a really good question, which I don't have a good answer to, actually, because we only started this whole pre-marketing thing 3 years ago. Our numbers are still in the making. And third-party tools like KickTrack, for example, don't have straightforward answers yet to pre-marketing comparing to funding results. I can't give you a good answer. That's still a bit of a mystery. Again, coming to this 10 to 60% range, even just from what within platform conversion from pre-marketing following to backings, it doesn't even mean the amount they are backing. So, let me say working on it.
hire an intern and have them do all the research on comparable Kickstarters while you focus on things that are more important.
Yes, genau. But even that, yes, I do appreciate hire people always. People are good to work with. But even you can't just say, hey, they did this that like this. It doesn't mean that you will reach the same results. It depends.
It depends. See? Michael, thank you so much. This is all we always love having Kickstarter folks on here. We really greatly appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan. For the invite.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. Michael Love, everybody. Big hand for Michael Love. Thank you so much. So make sure, and if you're not part, join our Discord server. It's discord.gg/indiegamebusiness. Also, check out our merch, right? There's a look at this thing scrolling across the bottom of the screen. Indie Game Business merch at streamlabs.com/indiegamebusiness. And newsletter. We're talking about the newsletter, so sign up for that. Just go to indiegame.business. You get all kinds of tips and tricks weekly. There's a list of publishers and 900 investors. So that's pretty awesome.
800 technically,
but yeah, 800.
We'll say 900. Well, who counts?
One of them is powerful.
900, 800 plus.
About that? 5 billion publishers and investors in
$1
that list.
$1 billion. Oh, Pinky. Yeah. Yeah. So thank you so much, everybody. And thank you for joining us on Discord. And thank you for everyone watching on Twitch, YouTube, LinkedIn, and Facebook. Have an amazing weekend.
Thanks, everybody.
Cool. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to Indie Game Business. You can learn more about the show and our online business networking events at indiegame.business.